demonic Democrats, led by the barely literate Jerry Nadler, summoned Attorney General William Barr to a hearing on Capitol Hill last Tuesday. As usual, it was not a hearing to learn what the Attorney General had to say, but an ambush, allowing Democrats to hurl the most vicious insults at Barr. They did not ask him questions, but each took turns scolding the Attorney General. The absurdly obese Nadler began by saying that the anarchist attacks in Portland were a myth. According to Nadler's addled mind, the buildings weren't burning, the violence was not occurring, and the police were not under attack. He then led his hypocritical comrades in lecturing Attorney General Barr. They would not allow Barr to answer their insults, insisting that he was trying to take up their time, and they wanted that time to insult the man. It is time for government officials to serve notice to the Democrats that when asked to appear for a hearing, they intend to be heard, and that when the insults begin, they will politely leave the room. Jerry Nadler, Adam Schiff, Nancy Pelosi, Chuck Schumer, Maxine Waters, Sheila Jackson Lee, and their ilk are but a boil on the backside of humanity. They have no conscience and no shame. Power consumes their narrow world. And now to my commentary. I realize that the blindly obedient ones among us may get riled up when hearing this truth, but it needs to be said in this time of rewriting history. If George Washington is to be pulled down from our adoration because he owned slaves at a time when slavery was an accepted practice, and all of the good things that he did for America shoved aside, so must it be for every so-called icon. Be careful, progressives, of what you wish for. I share credit for today's commentary with Joel Pollack at Breitbart, Catherine Evans of American Thinker, and The Daily Caller for their research and comments, which I incorporate into my own. When progressives begin their witch hunts, they have no idea where it might lead. These are imperfect people demanding perfection from everyone else. When all of this statue toppling and destruction began, I warned that it would get out of hand. I also pointed out that all human beings have imperfections. Lately, the progressive crowd has begun to proclaim themselves judge and jury when it comes to historical figures. They seek out the worst about those on a pedestal and refuse to consider the good that they may have done. They seek to impose today's values on generations of more than a century ago. Now we come to the lionization of Representative John Lewis. When the death of John Lewis was announced, I immediately took to Facebook to praise him for his actions of 55 years ago in the civil rights struggle. I will always stand up for John Lewis as a pioneer of that movement. But that was decades ago, and John Lewis, the politician, was far from being the sainted figure Democrats and the media are making him out to be. In a YouTube video, Lewis recapped his days as chairman of the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee, or SNCC, to a group of Black Lives Matter activists. Using a bullhorn, Lewis urged the BLM activists to change America. You can do it. Organize, never give in. In the last 30 seconds, after pumping up the crowd, Lewis told them to never hate because it is not necessarily wrong or sinful or evil, but because it's too big a burden to bear. Especially since a video had just surfaced of four black adults torturing a mentally disabled teen, shouting F Trump and F white people. John Lewis took public swipes at President-elect Donald Trump and continued those attacks until the day he died. It wasn't the first time that Lewis tried to delegitimize the opposition. As the Democrats fawned over Lewis's casket, the media made an issue of pointing out that President Trump said he would not be going to a service for Lewis. Throughout Trump's entire term in office, John Lewis had consistently attacked him, including with racist slurs and lies. Lewis refused to attend Trump's inauguration or to accept the will of the people in Trump's election. He had backed a truly dishonest woman in Hillary Clinton and colluded with the Democrat National Committee to destroy Donald Trump. It should come as no surprise, then, that Trump would decline an opportunity to praise the man who had made him his enemy. It would be hypocritical for Donald Trump to pretend that he liked John Lewis. Democrats don't seem to have a problem with hypocrisy, but Trump declined to join them. The president has said in the past that he did praise Lewis's efforts in the civil rights struggle, but again, that was 55 years ago, and Democrats refused to look at Lewis's record after his youth wore off and his political career took on. John Lewis had trouble with the truth. When he announced that he would skip the inauguration of Donald Trump, he dramatically said that it would be the first time that he had skipped a presidential inauguration. That was a lie. Lewis refused to attend George Bush number 43's swearing-in ceremony. It just sounded like a stronger slap against Trump if he said that he had never avoided an inauguration, and so it was disturbing that he would not attend. If we're going to ignore the good that historical figures did and condemn them for their mistakes or even bad judgment, then we have to do the same with John Lewis. Every human being has a good side and a bad side. Representative John Lewis, the Democrat from Georgia, was a true civil rights hero. That is the good side. But he was also one of the most partisan members of the Democrat Party and frequently accused political opponents falsely of racism. Race consumed the life of John Lewis. He also used his iconic stature to deflect criticism when he was called out for his false attacks, exploiting and arguably demeaning the civil rights movement. Lewis falsely accused Senator John McCain and Governor Sarah Palin of sowing seeds of hatred and division at their rallies in 2008. In 2010, Lewis ratcheted up the hatred by alleging that Tea Party protesters had shouted racial epithets and spat on him during an anti-Obamacare rally. The late Andrew Bart, Breitbart, offered to pay $100,000 to anyone with proof that the racial incidents occurred. At a time and place where nearly everybody in the crowd had a camera phone in their hand, not one video surfaced of what Lewis had claimed. $100,000 reward, and not a soul claimed it. Lewis's Alinskyite tactics had ties to the civil rights movement itself. The roots of the movement, beginning in the 1930s, are rotten with communist influence. There is ample evidence that the Communist Party of the USA infiltrated the SNCC. Lewis himself wrote for communist periodicals, fronted for communist groups, received awards from socialist organizations, and supported socialist candidates. The aging former SNCC leader was marinating in his hatred of white America. After President-elect Trump responded to Lewis with tweets calling out the congressman's all talk and no action record when it came to fixing the mess in the inner cities, Lewis's pals in the mainstream media came to his defense, whining about Lewis's iconic status as a civil rights hero 55 years ago. Lewis's socialist solutions and anti-white vitriol hardly made him a hero, unless chaining his people to poor schools, fatherless homes, and generations of government dependency is heroic. It is at this point in my commentary that progressives and fringe members of the black community roll up in a fetal position and refuse to even consider the truth of what's being said. But here are five of the worst examples of what became, for Representative Lewis, a shamefully routine practice. In 2008, Lewis falsely accused McCain and Governor Palin of racism in their race against Barack Hussein Obama. He went on to suggest that the Republican ticket was creating the climate for racist terrorism. McCain never forgave John Lewis. In 2010, Lewis falsely claimed that Tea Party demonstrators had used the N-word during an anti-Obama rally. Lewis joined several other members of the Congressional Black Caucus in claiming that a crowd of thousands of Tea Party protesters on the steps of Capitol Hill had shouted the N-word at them as they walked through the crowd, apparently in hopes of provoking a reaction. But Lewis never proved that accusation. And again, when Andrew Breitbart offered to donate $100,000 to the United Negro College Fund for any video evidence of the N-word, nobody came forward, despite hundreds of cameras that were present. Lewis never seemed anxious to hear what black protesters shout at white protesters in crowds. Then, in 2012, John Lewis falsely accused Republicans of wanting to take Americans back to Jim Crow. He gave a speech at the Democrat National Convention in Charlotte, in which he recalled being beaten by white racists, along with fellow freedom riders. In 2016, Lewis compared Donald Trump to George Wallace. For those of you under 30 who were never taught history in America, George Wallace was governor of Alabama, and Wallace was a racist. He tried to block the integration of schools. Lewis concluded his speech by implying that Republicans wanted to bring back those days of blood and hatred. Lewis asked his brothers and sisters if they wanted to go back, or did they want to keep moving forward? John Lewis was a master of rhetorical questions. His entire life revolved around race. Also in 2016, Lewis said that Trump reminded him of the governors of the Jim Crow South and the police who let dogs loose on demonstrators. He said, quote, "Sometimes I feel like I am reliving part of my past. I heard it so much growing up in the South. I heard it so much during the days of the Civil Rights Movement. As a people, I just think we could do much better," end quote. He told that to the LA Times in an interview. But John Lewis remained buried in the past, using the events of more than half a century ago to remain relevant. In 2017, Lewis claimed that Trump was illegitimate because of a Russian conspiracy. Joining the foil hat brigade of Democrats, Lewis claimed that Trump was a kind of Manchurian candidate put in place by Russia. Lewis said, quote, "I don't see the president-elect as a legitimate president. I think there was a conspiracy on the part of Russians and others that helped get him elected." John Lewis had zero proof to back up those charges, yet he made them again and again. We, of course, now have proof that the whole Russia-Trump conspiracy was a product of the imagination of Democrats, and none of it was true. How do we know that? Because Democrats, like John Lewis, caused the American taxpayers to spend hundreds of millions of dollars in a witch hunt against Trump. The Mueller committee was stacked with Trump-hating Democrats who moved heaven and earth in an effort to get proof of a Trump-Russia collusion. But in the end, they failed. Not only did they fail, but they failed miserably. John Lewis never apologized for his false charges against Donald Trump. And yet, the media wants to make a big deal out of Trump's decision not to attend services for John Lewis. Given the circumstances, would any of you fault the president for taking a pass? I don't. And then in 2016, John Lewis claimed that Bernie Sanders, the independent from Vermont running against Trump and Hillary, had played no role in the civil rights movement. Lewis was a huge supporter of Hillary Clinton and her bid to be president, and he tried to trash Sanders' civil rights credentials. Lewis said, quote, "I never saw him, I never met him," end quote, as if he had seen and met every single civil rights supporter. John Lewis seemed to forget that the movement was not all about John Lewis, and that many others, including whites, supported civil rights at the time and still do. Proof later emerged of Bernie Sanders' arrest in civil rights protests in Chicago in the 1960s. As always, Democrats and their allies in the liberal media sought to capitalize on any Trump response to Lewis's claims by furiously waving the race card. Congresswoman Nancy Pelosi tweeted this, quote, "Let us remember that many have tried to silence John Lewis over the years and all have failed," end quote. Of course, Trump was not trying to silence Lewis, just to answer the false charges the man was making against him. The liberal L.A. Times posted an article entitled, "Trump Kicks Off Martin Luther King Weekend by Sharply Criticizing Civil Rights Icon John Lewis in an Apparent Attempt to Smear Trump as a Racist Who Attacked a Civil Rights Icon for No Good Reason." This new controversy, which had a deja vu feel about it, served as a vivid reminder that liberals and some weak-kneed conservatives had failed to learn the lessons of the past election. Rather than standing up against the Democrats' foul race card tactics, Republican Senator Ben Sasse, who had a track record of trying to undermine the president, tweeted that John Lewis and his talk had changed the world. He did not point out, however, that the talk he was referring to occurred over 50 years ago, and that Representative Lewis was now a career politician for more than three decades with little or nothing to show for it. The Nebraska senator was joined by another conservative, Bill Kristol, a former never-Trumper who disingenuously wrote that it's telling, I'm afraid, that Donald Trump treats Vladimir Putin with more respect than he does John Lewis. The only thing telling about that episode, however, is that it is a reminder that we have a new president in office who is willing to fight back and not be pushed around. That, of course, is news that conservatives like Bill Kristol should welcome instead of cowering from. That Democrats would attempt to deify Representative Lewis and stigmatize anyone who points out his political failures is understandable. Supporters of fascist and communist regimes typically try to ensure that anyone who dares to criticize old party leaders is to be condemned. But it is somewhat surprising and disappointing that conservatives would fall for this. Donald Trump showed in the 2016 election that the best way to defeat liberal bullies is by fighting back, not by whimpering out of fear that the liberal media will make you look bad. The reality is that no matter how Republicans try to play the political correctness game, liberals are always going to brand them racists, like they did with John McCain, Jeb Bush, and Mitt Romney. So, instead of playing the liberals' games, Republicans have to stand up for themselves when liberals dishonestly attack them. That is true even if the liberal bully is treated by the media as a sacred national figure based on actions that took place more than 50 years ago. Nobody seriously suggests that Zimbabwean dictator Robert Mugabe or former Ghana ruler Kwame Nkrumah should be judged solely by their heroic actions several decades ago when they were freedom fighters. Instead, a fair accounting of those leaders takes into account their actions once they seized power and entered politics. In the same way, Representative John Lewis must be judged and held accountable for what he did or did not do during his more than 30 years in political office. Unless America, under the influence of Democrats and the liberal press, has become a country like Stalinist Russia, Maoist China, or Mussolini's Italy, where sainted political figures cannot be criticized. The fact is, Representative John Lewis had a long track record of failing millions of black constituents. The city of Atlanta, which falls in the district that Lewis represented for more than three decades, remains plagued by homicides, chronically failing public schools, and egregiously high levels of black poverty. For Trump, in response to a gratuitous insult to fault the congressman for failing to deliver better results for his constituents, is not improper. My purpose today in visiting this subject is not to demean John Lewis, the civil rights pioneer. I give him full credit for his dedication to civil rights, his bravery. But his heroic efforts do not mean that the rest of his life was heroic. If we are going to forget the heroic efforts of George Washington in leading this country to independence, and the heroic efforts of Thomas Jefferson in writing the Declaration of Independence, and condemn them for one mistake of owning slaves, then John Lewis's shining moments in civil rights cannot be used to cover up his inept and dishonest political career. Democrats can't have it both ways, although they do continue to try. I have always believed that we should judge individuals on the entire body of their life's work, and that's why I object to the mobs destroying statues and monuments. Perhaps some of them do need to come down, but that's not a decision to be made by mob action. There is no logic to the mob. They just enjoy destroying things, destroying history. That's why they also destroy monuments to Frederick Douglass and black soldiers. Meanwhile, society is sitting back and allowing these racial, social misfits to destroy the country. We should celebrate the contribution of John Lewis to civil rights, but to pretend that he was not a vindictive, racist politician is wrong. Given his experience with Democrats on the Pettus Bridge, it is odd that Lewis would join their party as an older man. Indeed, folks, life is strange. As I was looking back on this, I debated on whether to bring out the truth, but it needs to be said. Democrats are lionizing this man. It's enough to salute him for the work he did in civil rights. But there was more to it than that. You know, we need to look at the entire life of people. They mentioned George Wallace. George Wallace was a racist, no question about that. I was working in Alabama at a small radio station when he was governor. I know what happened under George Wallace. But there came a time in his life when George Wallace had a complete transformation. He acknowledged that he had been wrong about the black people of Alabama and indeed the country. He was contrite about what he had done. But nobody takes that into account. When George Wallace's name is mentioned, only half or less of George Wallace's name is reconstructed. They use the other half, the half that saw George Wallace the racist. All of us can go back in time and be a little disappointed in what we've thought and done about racism, blacks as well as whites. That's why I'm considering a podcast with a friend of mine, a black friend, in Texas. Darryl Brown was with the ABC network for decades. We got to know one another pretty well. Darryl has his own ideas based upon his life as a black man, what has happened in his life, how it was growing up at a time that America could truly be ashamed of. I have empathy for that. But I also see things from my perspective, a white perspective. I believe that a clenched fist is a threat. I don't care if the clenched fist is on the end of a wrist of a white person or a black person. What do you do with a clenched fist? You can't pick up anything. You can't write anything. You can hit something. And that's what I see with a clenched fist. Darryl sees it differently. So we will discuss both sides, and I hope and believe in a civilized way. Otherwise, I would not be doing it. I trust him. I understand that he sees things sometimes entirely different from me. But those are things we need to talk about. What was your life growing up? Whether you're black or white, what was your life like growing up? Were there instances where you should be ashamed? We're going to discuss all of those things when Darryl and I begin the podcast, which should be pretty soon, and I'll notify you in my commentaries how to hear that podcast and also post it on Facebook. I'd like to hear what you think about what I think, what I say in my commentaries. I'm truly interested, whether you agree or disagree. Human beings agree and they disagree. We can too. Email me at tom@tomjoyner.net. I'd love to hear from you. You do matter. And I'll be back again next week, God willing, same time, same station. And God bless America.